And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's Friday the 19th of July. It is 4 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. We're back in the confines of our studio here at the mountaintop in Letterkenny after a wonderful day in beautiful Annagry yesterday. And again, thank you so much to the lovely welcome that we received and the hospitality we received over there at Annagry. It was a wonderful day, but as I say, back in studio and it's back to business as usual. We have our Friday panel joining us a little later on. We have That's Entertainment and so much more in between. So let's say hello to our guests. We'll say good morning first to Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear. Letterkenny, good morning to you. How are you getting on, Leonard?
Not too bad, Greg. Good morning, panel.
And also we have Councillor Troy Gallagher of the Labour Party all the way over in Islington. Good morning to you, Troy. Thank you for your time.
Morning, Greg. Morning, panel. Morning, viewers.
Great to have you with us. And Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. How are you getting on, Paddy?
I'm getting on very well. Thank you. Good morning,
good to
everybody.
Have you with us. Okay, quite a bit to get through. Listen, just looking at the front pages, this is where we probably need to start. A fire broke out last evening at the former Crown Paints warehouse in Coolock in Dublin, which is being prepared to house international protection applicants. A number of videos were posted on social media showing flames coming from the building with protesters outside cheering. The site has been the scene, of course, of violence and unrest and protest over plans to house international protection applicants in the former warehouse. Elsewhere this week, tents sheltering 15 asylum seekers were attacked in City Quay in Dublin. Barricades were also pulled down by locals. The camp, which was attacked, was set up at 8 p.m. in an evening on the quay, was attacked almost 3 hours later. And meanwhile, a man is due in court in connection to threats to kill against Mary Lou McDonald and Drew Harris. Troy, how concerned should we be about the direction this country is going? And I suppose some of the scenes that we're seeing were replicated in Leeds as well, and we're seeing it in other places. And you're listening to some of the Donald Trump speech last night and the tone and the rhetoric. It's not really, I mean, we can talk about Coolock and we will, but this is a global issue, and it's amazing. And I always find it amazing how we think it's something that's only happening here or in one part, but it is being replicated everywhere you go.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, it's really concerning. Well, it's more than concerning. It's something that needs to have urgent action on. Within Ireland itself, you know, it's about 6 years since these sort of incidents started in Hotel Mouville. I think we need to be able to have an answer to respond to not just why this happened, and they have an issue, open conversation about immigration, and understand and have people involved and engaged in that conversation about immigration to detoxify and de-escalate, and also to move away the void from the people who are off the far right who are using these incidents to be able to cause criminal havoc, but also to engage with people who feel that that somehow they're being left out, that they're not, you know, they're being left behind, and they're not being able to have a voice in this. This in France, this in America, I think it's going to get, unless we do something right now, it's going to get a lot worse. And I think, but not just government, but communities have a role to play in this too.
We've seen it before our eyes, how people feel more confident in expressing their opposition to it. The level of violence, you know, the scenes of balaclavas, rock throwing, you know, petrol bomb throwing, even. People feel empowered to do that now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We saw the fella making threats there. He's before the courts now to Mary Lou McDonald and Drew Harris. You wouldn't have seen that a few years ago. People feel as if it's okay now, that this is where we've gotten to in this country. But that being said, people feel that decisions are being made in rich parts of Dublin to put these centres in poorer working class areas with little or no consultation. The government were warned this would happen, and yet here we are. So it doesn't surprise me where we've gotten to.
No, that's right. And it calls for the greater need to have that consultation. That's when people are feeling left out, because the vacuum that's created from the lack of consultation, from the lack of engagement, from the lack of being able to have an open conversation, without toxic and people to be able to have their voice from being in community centres or through engagement to say, let's have a proper meaningful consultations where people are involved in design and the solution as well, rather than being told this is happening to you and we expect you to fall.
The only thing is, you see, and I think this is why they kind of did away with the consultation, is that will you ever get a community to accept 200 or 300 male refugees? You know, will there ever be a local agreement? In other words, if they do engage, like perhaps you're suggesting, the model that you're talking of, well, then it's not going to be in my backyard anywhere in the country.
No, but just to, if you use my own ward in Bun Hill, there is a hotel called the Birmingham Thistle Hotel that has got all male immigrants in it. 10 minutes across the road, at the far side in the City of London, they've got a hotel with female and children. And, you know, so I get this on a daily basis where people are saying, oh, these migrants are in the hotel. They get 3 square meals a day. They've got an iPhone and they've got shoes. And yet we're struggling with poverty and you know, to support the family and get children. And next to housing, I have spent a lot of time going around speaking to people, tenants associations, community groups, to outline what the facts are. And the facts are that in Britain, the immigrants get a card of eight sterling a week, of which they can pay. They do get donations of free clothes that are given. And, you know, they do get the meals, but they're in a hold up in a room. Not all those facts. The reason I point that out is not all those facts are getting across. And until both councillors and community leaders actually spell out what the reality is,
it's not a bed of roses, really. But I find it intriguing, but not surprising that you're just to remind listeners, you're speaking to us from Islington in London. This is not Ireland you're talking about. So the exact same conversations and concerns are happening. Paddy, what's your view on all of this?
Well, one of the things, I suppose, that I was struck with about what happened when the whole issue blew up in Coolock in the first place was the coverage that RT News and Virgin Media and even the broadsheet newspapers were giving it, vis-a-vis the coverage that on social media that people that were on the ground were talking about. And the two of them were two very different things. This is a powder keg now about to go one way very badly if it's not managed with properly. Because there was a huge emphasis, for instance, on RT on the night on public order and security. Even the fact that we had David McCulloch, when he read the RT news on Tuesday, he had a retired assistant chief, a Garda assistant chief inspector on the radio or on the TV, and he was talking about public order and how to manage it. And then we had Brendan O'Connor of the GRA, highly critical of the Garda Commissioner because he didn't deploy the public order unit quick enough. And that was fair enough. But there was a huge emphasis that this was a public order issue. The Garda can't solve this. This is a political issue. This is a social issue. Because on the ground, when either local media or other media were interviewing people on the ground, they were having a totally different take on it. They were talking about the consultation that was supposed to have taken place, but it was done with a predetermined outcome, which means it was more or less worthless. The second thing is the charge being made against the Department of Social Integration was that they were actually picking the people in Coolock who they were going to talk to rather than the other way around, which means the whole thing was completely meaningless. And the case being put forward was there was one of the people that attended the protest. And by the way, now their face wasn't masked and they weren't throwing rocks or anything like that. But they were talking about places, middle class areas like Dundrum and Killiney and Howth and Rathgar and Rathmines and Terenure and go on and on and on. And no migrants has been placed in their area. How come that it's all socially deprived working class areas that are having to take a disproportionate amount? And they also made the fact that in a lot of the areas in Dublin that are deprived, there's a lot of derelict buildings in them. And people have been crying out for something to do with those buildings for a long period of time. And hey presto, the buildings are being renovated now, all right, but to take in new people. And the other thing that they were disaffected as well about is the fact that there was no political reps from any of the political parties on the ground that night, which was very poor. And there was a sense of alienation by the people. And on top of this, then they had further aggravation by the fact that recreational rioters and troublemakers were being bussed into the area to take advantage of it and actually give the people in Coolock a very bad name, because Coolock is a well-established community in the northeast of Dublin. It's been there for a long, long time. And it is not the byword for trouble and strife in this country, but it's actually got the reputation of it now. Troy lives in London. I did for a while as well. He's probably not old enough to remember, but I do. Vicious riots in England in the 1980s in places like Brixton and Toxteth. And they were made up of people as well. Very same thing about the fact that they were disaffected. They seemed to be on the outside. The voice wasn't being heard. It was the time when Margaret Thatcher was in her pomp in Britain. There were some people doing very, very well. They had been completely left out. And we need to be very, very careful, Greg, in this country about how we deal with this, because we're going to divide ourselves into the haves and the haves not, and that's not going to be pretty.
So the takeaway from that is what, Paddy? I mean, what do we need to be going forward? Because we're doing the same thing over and over again, and we were having these conversations as it relates to the accommodation that was earmarked at that time for Moville. The people that were in the hall at that time were talking about, you know, the pressure on schools, the GP, the hospital. There was no talk of race or ethnicity or a person's background. It was genuine concerns as why here we don't have the resources to double our population and so on and so forth. Right, so that's going back an awful long time ago. Then some idiot decided to exploit that and set the hotel, or attempt to set the hotel on fire. That was not representative of the concerns of the locals. So now we have to sort of say, well, what do we do moving forward then? Because,
well, Greg, sorry to cut across, if that is the genuine reason for that, because if we're waiting for enough hotels and schools and hospitals and GPs, we're never going to take anybody in this country. I mean, there's also a parallel.
Just one in relation to that, Patrick, but I do have to go back to the point that you mentioned about where these people are going into. Because if it was right across the board in the more affluent areas and the poorer areas, then I get where you're coming from. Our system will never be up to scratch and blah, blah, blah. We can't probably address that, but we can. There is a sense that there's an unfairness to this. It is not in the leafy suburbs that this is happening, where people maybe have private health insurance and don't have to worry about the hospital.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The point I was going to make, there's a parallel demonstration taking place in a place called Dundrum in Tipperary. It's a small village. There's only one hotel in it, and I think there's people that are seeking international protection are going there. There was people picketing outside. One woman who was interviewed on the camera for RT, she had a sign saying, "Please keep our golf course and our hotel open." Now, for God's sake, if she's putting the availability of a golf course above the well-being of people who are fleeing, I suppose, persecution or whatever they're fleeing from, I mean, it's a desperate state of affairs. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people are putting forward genuine reasons, what would happen with, say, for instance, if the GPs and the schools and everything else were provided? I don't think people would accept them either. Because let's be frank about this. People 2.5 years ago started to come into this country in very large numbers from Ukraine, but there wasn't a whimper about that. And I suspect the reason being is because predominantly they were white, they were Christian, and many of them spoke English. But once the skin gets darker, once you move away from the Christian faith, and once English isn't their first language, then it becomes
okay. I want to bring Leonard into that, but that's you're brushing over there to some extent the fact that it's pretty much accepted that these are people, many of them are destroying passports on the plane or getting rid of them, that we don't know necessarily their background or their motives. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't come down to skin colour. I mean, we knew it's Ukrainian people, right, that are fleeing a war, coming over here, with their driver's license, the passports and all that type of stuff. I really don't think it's fair just to talk about skin colour here, because there is a great deal of fear and uncertainty what the background of some of these people are, you know, what their motives might be, what, if any, threat they might present. That has not been talked about or clarified. And then you've got other groups that are saying, well, these guys, I mean, listen to Donald Trump. He's saying that these people are coming out of asylum centres, you know, using phraseology like prisons, mental hospitals. And that's the person who's going to be leading the free world in about 6 months. Okay, so I don't think it's about the skin colour. It's about the lack of education and information for the local communities. I'm sorry to... I just don't think it comes down to race solely, Paddy, with respect.
No, but it is a feature. It mightn't be. I mean, I spent the first 21 years of my life in this country, and I would say if I met 20 people of colour in that 21 years, and that would be the height of it. And those 20 people that I met were all junior doctors in the mental health service in Donegal. But when I went to live in London then, and Troy is there, the profile of the population was completely different. It was fine. There was no different. We're actually catching up now in this country with the eclectic mix of populations and the destinations of people and all that. And we're having trouble accepting that. That's all that it is. I mean, if you go to any big city or whatever throughout Europe, the profile of the population that you see walking up and down the street is quite different.
Okay, but these are thousands and thousands of people, right, who are predominantly male, who are just coming here. It's not like there's any invites or there's any jobs. Or there's a family structure or whatever, I think it's perfectly understandable that people will go, well, what is this? Because there is no explanation. There is zero explanation. And it's people, obviously, if you live in a village of 700 people and 200 people, many without English, all men, and they're all put in the one building, I don't think, I really genuinely don't think skin colour comes into it. I think if that were 200 Polish or French
I'll
Italian...
I'll tell you what, Greg, would be an issue. Sure. I'll tell you what, Greg. For the first time in the history of the state, apparently, I read this in the Irish Times during the week, political parties are going to have a feature in their manifestos for an upcoming general election in this country that we will have in the next 6 or 7 months. And for the first time in the history, they're going to have a manifesto, a feature in it about immigration and how to deal with it. That's inward migration into the country. We are either going to have to accept this or we're going to have to reject it, one or the other. I suspect it's going to be somewhere in the middle. I told you before on your programme, Greg, and I haven't changed my mind, that Ireland is now a destination of choice for many, many people that are coming from North Africa, Eastern Europe, the Middle East and Afghanistan. And just because we're surrounded by water on the four sides doesn't mean to say we're going to be able to keep them out. We're not, and they're coming, and we better accept that.
Yeah, well, as I say, you know, in terms of language and rhetoric, that's what Donald Trump described as an invasion last night in the early hours of last night. He says this is an invasion. Leonard Watson.
You know, Greg, I'm kind of agreeing with both Patrick and Troy. Like, Patrick's right. These people are coming anyway, and we have to deal with it, and we have to deal with it in the right way. But there is two strands. This, again, the lack of information, you know, and Patrick's right, there's certain areas of Dublin that are, these people have been tempting, they are troubled areas, or not troubled areas, but they're deprived areas. And I was listening to a thing in News Talk last day, I was in Dublin, and it just showed the difference. One woman was on, she was chatting about, you know, what about her doctor services, what about the schools? And that was perfectly reasonable. And, you know, she said, we need to get information about how, you know, are we still going to be at a doctor's appointment, you know, kids in the school? And then he went to another lady and she says, you know what, she says, I've seen the internet. These people have no paperwork. These people are all criminals. And I thought it was a great thing he said to her. She says, I don't let my daughter out in the street at night anymore. And he turned around. He says, just look over there. And there was 10 men. He counted with balaclavas on. He says, so you feel safe with your daughter running around with these guys here? He says, you know, you cannot judge people. You know, everybody coming in this country is not a criminal. Mm-hmm. We have as many criminals in this country as coming in. Like, you know, and his point was too, he says, we had a soldier, he says, in the last couple of weeks, who was convicted of beating. He was a white soldier. He says, that had been a black person. He says, there have been riots in the streets. He says, you know, but as his point was, the far right are now directing the narrative online. You know, there's nobody kind of arguing with what, those people are afraid. People like Mary Lou McDonald are getting death threats online from this far right element. And they are a small element. But as I say, the two strands have to work together. These people are coming. We have to deal with it. We have to. Do you know what? We should be welcoming them too. I was chatting to a local company the last day, Greg, where they were struggling to get staff. They interviewed 20 Ukrainians and they took on 15 of them, highly skilled people. and only four getting them on, they would be losing contracts. Like, so, you know, there has to be a middle line. You know, we have to. There has to be a middle line. You know, people, we need immigrants. You know, this country is going to fall flat in space if we don't have immigrants.
An absence of conversation, though. You know, I'm going to put a question to you a little bit later on about the funding of RTE. The licence fee is going to stay and all that. Like, are the likes of RTE and News Talk, I don't consume them so much as others might, are they hosting proper programmes whereby people are allowed to express their views and their concerns without being labelled far right or racist, so that we're actually having this conversation out front and in the open? We try and do that to some extent on this programme, but we don't have that national platform. Instead of, you know, going and reporting on what's there and all this, that and the other, like, there's a role surely with public service broadcasting, if they're doing the job correctly, have a weekly programme on it where people are allowed to come in, not on the streets or screaming into a mobile phone or whatever, sit in the studio, outline their concerns, have a panel of politicians that listen to what they're saying, rather than us presuming what is people's motivation or what are their concerns. So instead it's done in portrait mode on mobile phones, shaking all over the place, and we're reporting on Coolock as if everyone down there is just completely lost the run of themselves. Like, that's to me what public service broadcasting should be. It should have a role in allowing us have a proper national conversation on where this country is going into the future, and where people who don't want it to change as much as it is changing are able to sit there and have a conversation without being labelled as something. And maybe at some point we might come up with an agreement or some sort of way of moving forward.
But Greg, that's what I'm saying. I thought it was very balanced, that News Talk, where he had a lady, and in fairness to her, she was saying she had no problem with immigrants that day, but she just needed to know that the services were going to be there. Then, you know, what was the plan for these men?
Was she standing on the side of the street?
But still, Greg, you know,
I know. I'm talking about something else. Maybe Gay Byrne might have done it back in the day. I don't know if you know where I'm coming from.
I know what you're saying about bringing these people into your studio, but
get four or five of these fellas in from one of these centres. Don't cherry pick them, but get them in and let people hear their voices, hear their stories.
Yeah.
And then maybe they can make a decision. Actually, you know, I really don't want that. We don't hear it. It's all guesswork, Troy.
Yeah, just to come in on that, I think you've got a really good point there. Almost like a vox pop, equally introducing some of the people that are living in those centres, so people know the backstory, the reality. We did that to a certain extent in my ward in Bunhill, and when people, for those that could speak English, was fine, but those needed translator was provided. We're able to tell their backstory about why they're here. And not only do you hear the harrowing stories, but you also hear the understanding. Like, people are over here because the majority of the people that are coming into England are in desperate need. And that this image of home somehow, that they're here and they're, excuse my phrase, that they're sponging and taking advantage by choice is incorrect. And when you hear the harrowing stories about what the family went through, etc., you realise actually it's a way of getting to know the people in the community. Now, my big beef throughout all the conversations was that the migrants in Islington, they're not allowed to work, and we've got two top qualified doctors in there that want to even volunteer in the hospitals. They said, no, you can't. You can't even get involved in voluntary work. They're not allowed to, in case any of the Home Office will say, well, that gives you a right to work here. You've built up a pattern. And equally, if you met someone, so it's extremely strict, which is suffocating for them. But the communities don't know that until we had those engagement sessions and getting to know you through local community groups and through local charities. That helped break down some of the silo, and people actually think, okay. I think we need to do a bit more of that there as well. But there is a role for councils here as well, and that is by getting out that message, as you rightly say.
But what we seem to be doing now is we seem to be finding a group of individuals in a local area who are the welcoming party. Right?
And that does not
address anybody's concerns. It just makes them feel. Paddy, also, too, just a brief one before we go to the break. You know, a lot of people were going like, oh, my God, the CSO released today that the population could be 7 million here by 2057, I believe it was 30 years odd from now. You know, we can't have that. We can't do this and all that kind of stuff. What about our culture and our heritage and our language and all that? Again, we need to be having the conversation about if at the current rate, we're just about having more babies now than people are dying in this country. We've got an aging population. We've got we potentially could have a shrinking workforce, a lower tax take, and no one really to look after the likes of me and Troy or whoever, or Leonard or you, Paddy, when we get older, right? That conversation is not being had about the practical realities of this country. We're not having kids. We're dying. And the only way we can survive, and many other countries are the same, is probably with bringing people into the country. Why is that a conversation not being had or articulated or what have you?
Yeah, you see, there you go. You know, it's a bit like there's certain things in this country that you can't talk about. Like, for instance, none of the political parties want to talk about the affordability of old age pensions. Yeah. They don't want to touch that, even though that egg is going to crack sometime as well, that there has to be a certain level of the population who are working, who are supporting the people in retirement. But anyway, nobody can touch that either because it's too controversial. I mean, we are in land size, we're twice as big as Holland, but they have three times of our population. And if you look at certain tasks and jobs in Ireland, particularly in the unskilled areas, whether they're in the public service or the private service, a lot of those jobs are now being done by people that are coming into the country. But make no mistake about it, you know, we do need them because we're not able to generate enough people ourselves here. There will come a time, I probably won't live to see it, but there will come a time where somebody with a Ukrainian surname will lift the Sam Maguire Cup for County Donegal. There will be a time when somebody of recent foreign heritage becomes a Taoiseach in this country. That's going to happen. It's happened in Britain. We had the last Prime Minister, for instance, he was second generation Indian. We had the Foreign Secretary before James Cleverly, and before that, Suella Braverman. All of those were people from outside Britain originally, and that's going to happen here too. But you're perfectly right. You know, we do need those people because we're not going to be able to support ourselves.
It's
in the future.
Absolute fact because there is just no way, unless we just peter out and die poor, sad and miserable, we simply don't have the new people being born here to sustain the ageing population. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for that so far. Okay, your view is very important, by the way. 086 60 25,000. You can comment on our socials as well, of course. You're hearing from Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, Leonard Watson, the owner of Watson's Menswear, Letterkenny, of course, heavily involved in Letterkenny Chamber, and also Councillor Troy Gallagher, Labour Party rep, who's talking to us from Islington. Caller says both sides are right to agree. It is a combination of racism and a lack of information. There are lots of organisations like the Donegal Intercultural Platform that are getting the word out there and sharing people's stories, but they're underfunded. But they also will be perceived as an NGO, as an arm of the state, trying to convince you of a certain narrative. I'm not saying that is their remit, but I do see people that are involved that are associated with it, and some of the reactions, some of the online rhetoric. It's not necessarily with a view to changing people's minds, it's to label. Morning, Greg. The question on people's minds is, why is it all men, no women or children? So far, we've around 4,000 young men into Ireland, not one woman or child. And again, Paddy, and we'll move on from this, but that's a very important question as well. Is it a case that it's men that primarily are at risk in some of these countries? Are they just abandoning their women and children behind them? What about them? Or is it a case that they're coming over here to set up and then bring their families over with them? I'm not saying any of that's right or wrong, but I'm saying, like, there is no answer to that.
No, but there are people doing this legally and they're doing it illegally. I mean, there is I don't know what the percentage of it is now, but the ratio of people who were born overseas that are now working in the health service, even in the health service in Donegal, is beginning to increase all the time. And a lot of the people, because they're coming from very far away, when they come in here and they get a work permit and they get established, they bring their family with them. Isn't that the natural thing to do? And then there are people then that are coming in here then illegally, and they're doing the very same thing. You know, Ireland is a very temperate place now. I mean, we have a nice climate. It's a relatively well-to-do country. We have a lot of, we're complaining about public services, but we have relatively good public services in comparison to what a lot of countries have around the country. As I say, we have a nice climate. We don't have too much extremes. The country is relatively safe. Why wouldn't people want to come here, for instance? And when they do come here and they come established, I mean, the Irish, as far as I remember, you know, they done that. The older son went, and when he got established, he took his younger brother.
Yeah, but is that what's happening then?
The younger sister.
Is that what you believe is happening then? That
I would have
no listen,
doubt.
You know, I think also to the public. I don't think, and I'm not, don't mean this facetious or whatever, but in Coolock, I don't think they were moving in many junior doctors and consultants and, you know, paediatricians and stuff. You know, I mean, I think the public can separate those that are coming here and working in the hospitals, and then the large groups of males where they don't really know what they're from or what qualifications are they. And people are saying, well, where are their mums and sisters and partners or boyfriends, for that matter, or whatever it might be, and their children. Do you know what I mean? There's no story. There's no backstory. Why are they all?
No, but I would suspect that a lot of the guys that are coming, the backstory mightn't be palatable to people either. I mean, they are fleeing things like enforced enrollment in gangs and illegal armies and stuff, and also enforced conscription into armies in various countries as well. And I suppose if you set up some kind of a town hall meeting and people come in and you know, why are you here, Paddy? Well, I'm here because I don't want to be conscripted into the army into Nigeria. It mightn't go down very well. But there's a variety of reasons, I would say, why men are here.
Okay.
Plus the fact that they're probably more mobile within the individual family unit, and that they will be, many of them, I have no doubt whatsoever.
Right. I just want to bring
the family with them.
Bring Troy in on this, because, you know, I think Britain's ahead of us in relation to this, and there is a big conversation, or there was a big conversation, as to whether, you know, professional people should be allowed to take their families to work, to live with them, Troy. You know, doctors and whatever, and other professionals, and quite a resistance for them to be able to bring their families to join them. So, as I say, you know, Britain's somewhat ahead of us in relation to that, but that's professional people contributing to, you know, in inverted commas.
Yeah, and extremely strict on the rules and guidelines around that as well. But Britain has the view that for those families that are allowed to come along with husband, father, etc., they need to be separated because they don't want any child that may have been, if they were together, would have been born in Britain and have a right to British citizenship. So there's hence the reason they segregate people off and really strict rules around that. I think the answer is all three. Paddy is right on a number of issues. I think the solution that we need to now move forward is, well, the solution is that for people to be aware of what the background and some of the stories that are, without going into specific targeted stories that could leave people exposed. And I think that there's a value contribution that we all need to be able to make towards that, to share that information, have that understanding of the background story without that sensitivities and the levels of danger.
Sorry. And also, you know, Leonard, and Leonard as well, and as I say, last one on this, do you know, like people in Letterkenny, and they say it privately, I'm not sure they're saying it publicly, that they've noticed a significant change in the demographics in Letterkenny, and they wonder about, you know, the Letterkenny of old, is it lost and gone forever again? Is that conversation had? Are those people spoken to, or have their feelings... their concerns discussed? Do you know what I mean? Again, all of this stuff is happening off air and through text. There seems to be no genuine public discourse in relation to any of this.
Yeah, but you know what, Greg? I know you say about Letterkenny of old. Letterkenny has changed over the last 30 years, anyway. You know, the amount of people who've met Troy, me and Troy was at school together. Mm-hmm. Troy's now living in London. Like, you know, everywhere changes, like, you know, but what I do see, Greg, I do see people coming in. I see it now because I coach one of the local football teams. I see the young girls and boys out there playing. And it's all about integrating these people the right way, make them feel part of the community, make them want to feel part of the community. I keep going back to, Greg, go down to Letterkenny Street on a Sunday morning, any Sunday morning, and you'll see up to 30 people of colour out picking up litter and out. And that's people who want to integrate into our community. You know, they're getting involved in local charities and that. But we have to learn from the lessons of what happened in the UK. Well, there's places in the UK now, so no-go areas, because if this wasn't done right, you know, these people came in and they were, you know, they're chastised and all that. So they did the natural thing. They all went into one area, and then this doesn't work like so.
But there, you know, with the inward flow, though, Leonard, with the inward flow and the processing and all that kind of stuff, it is very hard to talk to get to the integration that you're talking of. That's why they're establishing these, you know, these centres with 300 or 400 men in them, because I know what you're talking about, but that's a process that has to be gone through and takes time.
But Greg, I'm just going to say another thing too. Like, for years, the undocumented in America, the Irish undocumented, like, you know, and this was always it's not like a badge honour for Ireland that, you know, all these undocumented Irish. And when you look at there recently, there was a guy brought back who murdered that Garda. You know, so people can say about criminals coming into this country. We've sent criminals all over the world too. Like,
yeah, I know, but it's the skip. But it's not
black and white either.
Yeah, but like, many of the undocumented in America, you know, were working, still are at the moment now, 40 or 50,000 and working them, paying tax. Some of them own bloody companies, for crying out loud. I think people feel that's a false equivalence. But that's your view, right? But I just have to make sure that people listening to sort of feel that their voice is heard. But I understand exactly where you're coming from. Right, we're going to have to move on. We could do the full hour on that, but I just want to talk about another couple of things. This week we saw another photo shoot involving politicians Simon Harris and Keir Starmer downing pints of Guinness. It seems to be the go-to option when we want to express our Irishness. You know, Barack Obama pulling a pint, other people, Ed Sheeran, all of them. Tánaiste and Micheál Martin then had to defend a visit to a Diego brewery this week in Kenya following criticism from Alcohol Action Ireland. Alcohol Action Ireland condemned the Tánaiste's visit in a post on X yesterday evening, claiming that politicians allow themselves to be used in the promotion of alcohol, and that probably could relate to Keir and Simon as well. Is it an area we need to look at, Paddy? It does seem to be the default option, either a Hurley or a pint of Guinness, and that's really much how you sum us up.
Well, my three kids are always getting on to me about that I don't understand the woke, and I always use that improperly in conversations and arguments and so on and so forth. When Ronald Reagan came to this country way back in the 80s and subsequently Bill Clinton and all that, and there was the traditional pint of Guinness, and I was sort of squirming at that at the time. I was thinking, oh, Jesus, this is plastic Paddy all over again. This is all we're worse for or whatever. But as I got older and I sort of accept most things now or whatever, and I began, you know, I've lightened up, so what? What was more important for me in that photo shoot was actually the dynamics and the chemistry between Simon Harris and Keir Starmer, without one shadow of a doubt. Wouldn't it have been nice to see Leo Varadkar and Rishi Sunak or Boris Johnson before that, leaning on a bar counter and having a pint of Guinness? Because I know you said in your opening remarks there about downing pints of Guinness. I'm sure they had about a half of the pint or whatever that they took. Ireland overseas.
Yeah, but you know, but Paddy, but you, yeah, but you, just in relation to that one, you know that it's a photo shoot, right? They probably can't stand the stuff, but
absolutely.
You know,
and that's more important to me. Is that look? I used to work in the mental health service in this country all those years ago. And I know what the effects of alcohol abuse have on people and families and industry and healthcare and all of this kind of stuff. But come on, lighten up a little bit. It's the relationship with the two men was far more important for me,
Leonard,
than anything else to pilot.
Well, do it, Greg, as a non-drinker, and I'm just looking at Troy now. I'm sure Troy held an odd pint of Guinness for a photograph over in London. Do you know what? I'm with Paddy. Do you know what? Greg, do you know what? It's something that's Irish. It's something, you know. As I said, I was more happy to see the two men actually having a proper conversation. It didn't look stiff. Like, as you say, when you've seen Leo Varadkar and Boris Johnson or Rishi Sunak, it looked very staged, where these two guys seemed to, you know, he brought over a Donegal jersey to him, like, because Starmer, he had his honeymoon in Donegal. So there is a connection there now. And you know what? There had to be a reset on it, but I just listen to it, Greg. It doesn't bother me. Like, anything that brings tourists into the country, who cares? Like, you know, it's just, you know, we can get hung up on a lot of these things now. But
I know. But there's an old episode of Family Guy, and they come over and the landing at the airport in Dublin or whatever, and it's just empty beer bottles and cans right across the runway, and you can hear the wheels running through them. It is kind of a it is kind of a view, and you know, it feels like if every time you went to Italy, you were just handed a pizza. Do you know what I mean? I mean, could we not?
But you're, as every American run around with a gun on their hip, you are shooting, killing people. You know, there's with these images, at least our images, maybe a slightly better image of some countries at the moment.
Like. That's right.
Yeah, I'm with Paddy and Leonard on this too. I think Guinness is a major tourist attraction. It contributes massively towards the Irish economy. It's a symbol. It's a symbol equally along with the harp and the shamrock, easily recognisable. And if they were due for the photo optics, anything else wouldn't have worked. But equally more important is the content of what was spoken about is very important, and about having that relationship a week within coming to office. And I was just going to say, Greg, I was absolutely delighted that obviously Simon's office listened to my interview with you.
That's right,
last
indeed,
week when they
yeah.
got the tips to know what to bring, bring across and what to say.
That's done nothing to get rid of the rumours about you and Fine Gael, Troy.
You heard them rumours too, Greg, yeah?
The one thing about Troy, actually, he's quite open. All right, listen, thanks very much. Back with more after this quick break. I suppose in the absence of an actual summer, we have to sort of go back and think of what summer means to us. What was your... Have you a favourite summer memory? I'll come back to you, Troy, because you were confirmed to join us a little bit later, and maybe you haven't had an opportunity to think on it. But, Paddy, I'm intrigued to for you to reflect on your perfect summer or what your favourite summer memory is.
Well, the age that I am, I suppose, when I remember back, you know, I have this notion in my head.
Can I just say one thing,
Paddy?
Summers
were always very sunny.
You're not half as old as you think you are. Everything is about your age. You are not. Yeah. You are not old. Okay, get that out of your head.
Oh yeah, no, that's fair.
You're in your prime now. Go on.
But I had this notion in my head that the summers was always very warm. My father was a farmer, and my mother was a school teacher, so I always remember we lived about a mile away from school, and there was no school transport at the time. And I always remember I have these notions about walking to school in lovely summer days. And it mightn't have been as nice at the time, by the way. And also working on a farm during the summer when there wasn't the same level of machinery to assist with the work than there is now. Looking back on it with very fond memories. But at the time, it probably wasn't that fond at all, if the case may be, you know. But there's lots and lots of things, I suppose, that one can think of, but they would be the main things.
Yeah, what about you,
Christmas
Leonard?
As well, when Santa Claus came and stuff, was always very, very nice. Like, you
in
know,
the
and,
summer?
I don't think Christmas was ever, ever the same when Santa Claus stopped coming to me, you know.
No, never, never. Leonard, what's your favourite summer memory, or what's your ideal summer for you?
Well, do you know what? I suppose I better say, me and Troy's actually was rare, not a stone throw from each other, and we went to school together. But do you know what? The summer seemed to be hotter back then, Greg, when you were younger. Like I remember going out in the morning, we've a field beside us, and we're Gerton Avenue, and we played football all day, like, and you seem to be out all the time. You know,
3 years ago, 3 years ago and 2 years ago, we were in the midst of absolute baking late 20s temperatures here, by the way. 2 years ago and 3 years ago. But I take your point. I do take your point that it did seem to be though I have great memories of spending an entire summer fishing, and it was perfect because it was always raining and there was floods in the rivers, and so I suppose you can pick it out. But what would your best summer memory be, Leonard? Other than throwing stones at Leonard Troy, which you've already admitted, you tested the range. You said I was within a stone's throw. You must have known that because you tried.
I was some throwaway stone. But you know what, Greg, there's probably lots of memories. Like, you know, like even I came out of work in the orchard, and maybe the Euros or the World Cup was on.
Yeah, brilliant.
Them summers were great. Like, you know, you're working in a bar and you're having the crack with it. And even working in the Mount Errigal during rally times, that as Patrick says, sometimes you look back and think the work was hard, but it was great crack.
The crack was good, yeah. Troy, what about you?
Yeah, similar to Leonard, growing up in the 80s, you know, money was tight and times were hard. So we'd go away for the day down to Ards, which is my favourite place in Donegal, and spend time down there. Then come, as Leonard said, come up in the evening and be out running around, playing football, rounders, going to Rogers Burn. Always been back in time for, I don't know if you remember, V in 1983 and 84.
Yeah. Dun-dun.
And my guy on a Saturday
try. I love me.
And one of the one things.
Do you ever remember when she ate the head off the white mouse or rat? It was like, ah!
That's right.
What a brilliant concept of a show that was. Go on ahead, sorry, Troy.
I must say that you guys had a very privileged youth when you
played
all day and fishing all day and go to Ards all the time. That wasn't what my youth was about.
Well, I didn't want to. Hey, work, but come here, Paddy. I didn't want to old man it, but it wasn't actually a proper rod. To be honest with you, you know. But anyway, listen.
Have you ever seen the football we're playing with too, Paddy?
Greg, could I just also say one of the things, and Leonard will remember this, apart from the festival, being on festival committees, but also outselling sunflowers for Donegal Hospice when Donegal Hospice was above Doherty's Butchers. Isabel Doherty was in the bookshop then. So I was outselling sunflowers when it was trying to raise funds to build the hospice. And that was great crack, and of course, linking in with the festival and all day raising £1,000 selling sunflowers was a great memory. You've seen the real community.
Lovely stuff. Troy, it's been an absolute treat having you on the show. Thank you so much for accepting the invite, and we'll chat to you soon. Take care of yourself.
Bye all.
Bye-bye. Leonard, see you soon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Do you have to wish happy birthday to anyone or anything like that, or is all good? No?
I know, I think I'm okay, actually, Barbara Geller, good man, Greg. Wish Barbara a happy 50th today. Jeez, Greg, I see you got me in a hole there.
You are a first-class agent. See you later.
That's when you bring Patrick on, he's the wise one.
Take care, we'll chat to you later. Thanks very much. All right, by the way, Paddy, take care of yourself, always a pleasure.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Right,
thank
bye-bye, thanks for your time. Bye-bye. All right. Okay, we'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.